Welcome, and thank you for joining us next to the campfire. We appreciate your interest into the Squatch Stories. To get this episode kicked off, I would like to introduce the short story. So grab your favorite blanket, curl up next to the campfire, and listen to A Call for Help. What is your emergency?
Shh. All right. I'm in trouble. I need help. I've been held captive for the last... I don't even know how long I've been here. I need help. Can you please send somebody to help me?
Sir, can you speak up a little bit?
No, I can't speak up. If I speak up, he's going to hear me. If he speaks up, I don't know where he is.
Just take a deep breath. I have locked down your location. I'm sending officers there right now. Can you stay on the line with me just for a little bit?
Shh. He's back. He's back in the house. He's in the house. I have to go. Please. Let my wife and kids know.
So what did you think of that short story?
I think the guy on the phone call was overacting just a tad. I believed he was in danger, but in the same breath, I wasn't feeling like he was in danger.
I got goosebumps while we were doing that.
Oh, so that was probably one of my more believable performances, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
Man, yeah. Any of you listeners out there, I hope you're not. I'll rephrase that. If you are a 911 dispatcher,
I'm sorry.
I hope. Well, no, that is a rough job to have. But what I'm saying is, I hope you never have to hear old Squatch calling you, acting like that, because then there's some issues. Constance did it.
Throw me underneath the bus like that. Fuck.
I just want it on record.
Fair enough.
If anything ever happens to me, Constance did it. So, can you explain to me why I had to do that tad bit of acting? Because usually when you come up to me and be like, hey, I need a short story for this week, and this is all I can tell you, that's not cool.
Yeah, but this one I didn't really have to tell you, like, anything about?
No, this one's kind of common knowledge, but...
Well, I mean, we kind of grew up.
No. We did not grow up in the time of this.
For the time of the trials, we were growing up.
Yeah, it was one of those things that we didn't live in constant fear of.
No.
But just because it happened in our time does not necessarily mean that with as close of a location as it is to us, yes.
You have no clue. Anyways, go on.
What are we doing this week?
You have no clue?
Oh, no clue. Me and the listeners are on pins and needles.
No, whatever. We are doing the BTK killer.
Dun, dun, dun.
I know.
I want a shirt that says that.
Dun dun dun.
Yeah, but in my voice. I want a shirt that reads dun 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 in my voice.
Anyways, you ready?
Yeah. Yeah, and since I know that there's a lot on here, I'm going to try, listeners, I'm going to try to behave myself with no bad dad jokes or bad dad. Because, you know, he had kids.
God damn it, we start.
Alright, that's it. That's the last
one. Whatever.
That's the last one.
Whatever.
I'm going to sit here and behave.
Whatever. It wouldn't be a normal episode if you...
It wouldn't be a normal Constance episode if I didn't
know.
Sit here and razz you. Now, if it was a Squatch episode, because Constance is bad at the back and forth.
I'm sorry.
No, you're not.
No. No, I'm not.
You get more enthralled in the story than anything.
I do.
Which is good. It's good. And I'm not saying I'm not interested in your stories. I mean, I was the one that came up with the list.
I know.
I try to forget as much as possible with a lot of the topics that you pick.
That's why I try to go off script.
Yeah, I know.
I try.
But as a avid podcast listener and...
Yeah, I'm not, obviously.
Yeah, no. true crime, paranormal, TV, binger. It's a little tough for me not to know something about any of these cases or stories. But I try to forget when you take the reins. That way I can be...
Have you watched any of...
Oh. Are you kidding me? He's hometown hero. I mean, hometown villain. Of course. Of course I've seen tons of documentaries about BTK.
Well, I wasn't going to say that. I know, like, on our Netflix, I've saved, and I think you saved some documentaries.
Yeah, like I said, I've watched a handful of documentaries about it.
I haven't got brave enough to really just sit watching.
You should not.
I get scared of watching Criminal Minds, like, by myself.
Oh, when I was on the road?
Yes.
Yeah, no. You got afraid of watching X-Files by yourself.
Yes, I did. Not gonna
lie. There's some
episodes
of X-Files. I get it. You should definitely... I need to make you watch Twin Peaks. Oh. Oh, God.
We're getting so off topic.
I think it's because we are tired. This is episode 3 that we recorded in the last 2 days. Like I explained in the last episode, we're going to try something different for you guys that way we can continue to get out content. And we're trying to record as many episodes as possible at once.
Yeah.
That way we're not...
Playing catch up.
Playing catch up like we are. Because right now our schedules are so hectic. I'm not taking another episode to go back into that, but...
Yeah.
Anyways, BTK.
Anyways, BTK.
Not about our stupid lives.
Right.
We're not important. BTK. Drop some knowledge on me.
Okay, so his name is Dennis Lynn Rader. Born on... March 9th, 1945. Yee. Parents, Dorothy May Rader and William Elvin Rader.
40s were a weird time.
He was one of the 4 sons, his brothers Paul, Bill, and Jeff. This is where...
Paul, Bill, and Jeff.
Yeah.
And then you got Dennis.
Right.
I'm done.
So this is where it gets so close to home.
Oh?
Oh. Guess where he was born in?
Arma.
No. I mean, close enough, but...
Gerard?
No.
Fort Scott?
No.
Okay, I'm done guessing the local areas to us because they're going to pinpoint us. Where was he born?
Pittsburgh.
He was born in Pittsburgh?
Kansas. Yes.
You're shitting me.
I wish I was. I wish I was.
That dude was born in Pittsburgh,
Kansas? He was
Kansas?
Born here in Pittsburgh, Kansas.
All right. No offense, all. This is going to sound really fucked up. Thank God his family moved. That is a big name to have in this podunk town that we don't need.
You're right.
20,000 people, and he killed, what, 50? No.
Yeah, no. You're thinking of someone.
No, I am thinking of someone.
Someone
How
someone
many
totally.
Did he kill?
I
we'll
think.
Get there. We'll
yeah,
get there.
We'll get there.
There.
So, I mean, we could keep count. But yeah. Now, y'all, I say Pittsburgh. Squatch over here makes fun of me because I say it.
Picks. Just call it Pitt.
It's my Missouri, I guess,
that,
accent coming out.
Missouri redneck accent.
Yeah.
Coming out. Y'all ever been to Pittsburgh? Motherfucker, how do you spell it? Pittsburg. No H because we ain't in Pennsylvania. But it's Pittsburgh. Fuck.
So he was born here in Pittsburgh, but
Pittsburgh. Just call it Pitt, please.
Fine. This is like the last time I'll mention it. He was born here in Pitt.
Okay.
But he grew up in Wichita.
Okay.
So still close.
Wichita's only about what, 4 hours away? Three and a half.
Yeah.
So
depending on how long you're driving.
Depends on who's driving.
Yeah.
If it's Constance, it's an hour and a half.
No, that was you.
No. You have no proof.
I think I would say I have text messages to prove that, but you know, it's fine. Anyways. both parents worked very long hours and paid very little attention to the boys at home. Yee.
Common story.
Right. He later described feeling ignored by his mother in particular and resenting her later on.
Mommy didn't love me. I need a cat. That... See, this is why I say you're not a true crime junkie.
No.
Have you seen the documentary Don't Fuck With Cats?
No.
Another story for another day.
At a young age, he harbored... so he started harboring... sadistic sexual fantasies.
At a young age.
At a young age. I don't have that, but I'm going to assume probably teenage years.
Wow,
still.
Well, that's...
Still kind of young.
When a six-year-old starts saying that.
Oh, my God.
That's when you really need to start to worry.
Yeah. Okay, so he has sadistic sexual fantasies about torturing. He would he would have the fantasies of trapping and helpless women. If that made any sense.
No, it didn't. You want to try it again?
He had fantasies of trapping helpless women.
There you go.
Well, yeah. He also exhibited sadism.
Huh? Sadism?
Sadism.
Sadism.
Yeah. It's... Okay, so... Sadism is a pleasure divide from cruelty to animals. So he got off on doing...
So he got off on doing harm to animals.
Yeah, that's where he first started really torturing and killing and hanging small animals.
Hanging. Oh, that's a nice fur collection right there, Dennis.
Right?
No, that's not furs. Oh, shit, they're still alive.
He acted out sexual fantasies of, oh my god, there's a lot. Vulvers wrote, yeah.
What? You wrote it.
I wrote it, I know.
Voyeurism. He was a watcher.
Hey, I wrote it, and you know what? I also looked it all up, because...
Voyeurism, yeah, he was a watcher. Yeah. He didn't want to partake, he just wanted to watch.
Yep.
So that's usually when you get your peeping toms, or the creepy husband that hires a guy to come sleep with his wife and just watch in the corner.
Yeah.
Shit you not. There's people that get off on it.
Well, he was one of them. There's times, too, he would dress up, like, he would start cross-dressing, too.
So the dude was just all sorts
He was all
of,
fucked up.
Hey.
Yep. He often spied on female neighbors while dressed in women's clothing. And that's including female underwear.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with wearing a pair of women's underwear. There's nothing wrong with cross-dressing. That's okay. It's okay.
Okay.
It's okay. That's not the weird part. The weird part here is he was spying on his neighbors.
Yeah. While spying on them, he would masturbate with rope or other bindings around his arms and neck.
A lot of questions. How did he tie himself up? So he tied himself up and then he jerked it. How did he... You know what? Maybe I don't want these answers. Now that I think about it. Okay. Moving on.
He attended Kansas Wesleyan University after high school.
That's a Wichita school, isn't it?
Yeah. The KWU is a private Christian college in Salina, Kansas.
Oh, Salina.
So...
I was a Wichita school, and you said, yeah.
Yeah, no. I lied to you. I'm sorry. My bad. He dropped out after a year. He spent 1966 to 1970 in the Air Force.
Oh, man. This guy's hitting all the right things to be just so sorts of wrong. Christian college, Air Force. All these upstanding citizen qualities, and then...
Oh, no, it gets worse.
Oh, no, I know it gets worse.
I mean, yeah. All
right, keep going.
Okay, so after being discharged, he moved to Park City.
Park City. Sorry.
He worked in the meat department.
Yeah, he did. I know I said that was going to be good.
I told you
it
was.
I am a liar.
You are.
I am a liar. I'm sorry. We're really tired at the moment when we're recording this.
He worked in the meat department of a Leakers IGA.
Leakers IGA?
Yeah.
Usually IGAs are named after families. If the family was named Leaker... I don't think I trust that person to be my plumber. Mr. Leaker, did you get my pipes fixed? Sure did. Not buying it. Not buying it.
The supermarket was also where his mother was also a bookkeeper.
Oh.
So
mommy got him his first job.
Yeah.
I'm sure it wasn't his first job, but. Anywho.
He married Paula Dietz on May 22nd in 1971. They had two kids, Carrie and Brian. He later attended Butler County Community College in El Dorado, which, of course, is still there. He earned a AA degree in electronics.
Oh, an AA. Okay.
AA.
For a second there, I was like, hold on, he got a degree in Alcoholics Anonymous?
Yeah.
I'm uneducated, if anybody didn't know.
He got his degree in electronics in 1973, and then enrolled in Wichita State University and graduated in 1979 with a bachelor's degree in Administration of Justice. I'm waiting for a comment, but nah.
No comment.
God.
I just find it funny. So he got a criminal justice degree.
Yeah.
Huh. Weird.
Yeah. So I'm just gonna tell you now, because I had to go back and redo a lot of these notes too. Mm-hmm. It's gotta be all over the place, kinda. But I try to leave myself little notes to be like, yeah.
Okay.
So we're going to get to the first murder.
Well, no, wait a second. Hold on.
What?
We got all the background information we need.
Yeah.
Mommy didn't love me. Daddy didn't love me. I served in the military. I went to a Christian school.
Yeah.
Worked in the meat department of a supermarket.
Mm-hmm.
And then turned around and got an education.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we're all caught up?
Yeah.
Oh, and married and had two kids.
Oh, yeah.
Can't. No, that's... it plays a big role later on.
Or, I mean, a lot.
Yeah. Okay, so, that's what we got.
So far, that's what we got.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, January 15, 1974 is a normal afternoon for 15-year-old Charlie Otter, and two of his siblings were coming home from school. So, of course, they came home to a gruesome scene.
Okay.
Okay, so this is where my notes get all wacky. So, bear with me.
Okay.
Well, I had to redo them because, yeah. Anyways. So, Raider broke into the home of the Otter's family between 7 and 7:30 a.m.
Okay.
Okay. Raider had a well-figured-out plan, and he gathered his kit.
Oh, he had a kit.
He had a kit. Which consists of guns, cords, knives, multiple tools for breaking in and entering. He cut the phone line and broke into the house. He only expected to see the wife and two of the kids, but to his surprise, the husband was home.
Oh.
So, he pulled out the gun and told them that he was a wanted criminal and that he needed food, money, and a car. He forced the family into a bedroom where he tied their hands and feet together. Mm-hmm. He strangled Mrs. Otter mm-hmm. until she passed out, assuming she was dead.
Okay.
Mr. Otter, he put a plastic bag over his head and tied it with a cord. And he did the same to Junior.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, okay. This is where, again, my notes are all over the place. So the parents was Joseph and Julie. And the two kids that was home were the younger siblings, Josephine, who was 11, and Joseph, who was 9.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Josephine, he took down to the basement and hung her by a pipe.
He hung her by a pipe?
Well, he hung
her on a pipe?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to ask, how he can't be that strong to wrap a pipe around her throat to dangle her. Awful, I know. I know, I said I was going to be good. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
In his confession, he stated that once he hung the girl, he fulfilled his sexual fantasy by leaving semen by the scene of the crime.
So he jerked it by the scene of the crime?
Yeah. He hung her, and then, like, while her body was dangling, he jerked it.
And this is in the 70s?
Yep.
We were doing DNA testing. How the fuck did they not? Ugh, God, this guy went... Okay.
Ritter then tidied up the house and took some souvenirs like Mr. Otter's watch and radio and then went home. Charlie, who I mentioned before, he was 15, Danny 14, and Carmen 13, all his siblings, they thought the family was playing a really bad joke, but then realized it wasn't.
What? Mom, sister's hanging in the basement and dad's got a plastic bag over his head. Guys, this joke's not funny.
I think at this time, like, they didn't probably really see their sister hanging.
Even still, dad's laying unconscious on the floor with a bag over his head.
Well, him and Junior.
Yeah.
Later, sent a letter to the television station KAKE, admitting he was the one who killed the Otter family and that he wanted to be known as the BTK killer.
Hmm.
Yeah. Later in October of 1974. An editor of the Wichita Eagle newspaper received a phone call that guided him to a letter which was hidden in an engineering book at the Wichita Public Library. The police ended up finding the letter, which had the gruesome description of the murders. And the letter had a very, very bad grammar and stated, "I did it myself with no one's help."
Well, really bad grammar.
Yeah.
Was it just a throw off? I mean, he was an educated guy. I don't understand.
I think it was just a throw off.
But for somebody seeking the gratification of it.
He said the code words for me will be bind them, torture them, kill them. BTK. Only a few months after the Otter's murder, Kathleen Bright was murdered.
Kathleen Bright.
She was murdered on April 4th, 1974.
Okay.
Okay.
So we're going from what? January to April?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyways. January to April.
And yeah.
On April 4th, 1974.
That day he broke into her house from the porch door and hid in her bedroom.
Okay.
Around 2 p.m., she arrives home, but...
Uh-huh.
But with her brother.
Okay.
You were going to say something. So.
Closing time.
Oh, my God. One last call for alcohol. She arrives home with her brother, Kevin. He was 19. Which he was not expecting at all.
Sounds like for, a serial serial killer, whatever you want to call him, he has bad luck.
He wasn't really planning out these, I guess, really well.
No, I mean, you can only do so much in the 70s. It's not like
he can... Expect the unexpected.
Well, I'm just saying it's not like he's Facebook stalking these women or anything like that, and... using known locations. Yada, yada, yada.
Raider came rushing out of the room, gun pointing at them, telling them that he was a wanted criminal and that he needed a car, food, and money, and that he was on his way to New York.
Why come up with the backstory if you don't plan on letting anyone live? I mean, just in case, I get that. You're covering your ass. But if you're planning on killing everybody on the scene, what's the point? And how does anybody know that? Is that part of his confession?
Part of his confession, but this is also now tying into our short story.
Oh.
I don't know if you realized that when...
No, I did not. No, I did not know that.
That's why I was kind of more than happy to...
Go along with it.
Go okay. along with this. So Raider took Kevin to... Raider told Kevin to tie his sister's hands and feet together.
Okay.
Raider then took Kevin into the other room to tie him up. But Kevin put up a greater fight.
Good job, Kevin.
Right. Kevin was close to taking away the gun from Raider, but Raider was able to keep control of the gun and shot Kevin in the head twice.
So what does that have to do with the
short
story?
Hold on.
Okay.
Hold on. Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Are you done?
No.
Okay.
Just asking.
After finishing off Kevin, or so he thought, he went back to Kathleen.
Shot him in the head twice. What do you mean, so he thought?
You could kind of still survive. Depending on where.
Yeah, depending on where you should. Fair enough. I guess the whole head is still considered the head. Even though when you say head, I think the top of the crown. You know, brain zone, but yeah. I guess he could still get shot in the face and still live.
Well, I bet
technically that's being shot in the head, I guess.
I bet there's tons of soldiers that could say that. I know.
I'm sure there's a couple dudes rattling around with shrapnel inside their brains right at the moment, still being able to function, so.
I know Dad.
Claimed,
yeah. anyways, different story, different time. So... She put up a great fight, too. But
look at Bright's coming around.
Right? But he, again, he overpowered her, or she was putting up a great fight while he was trying to strangle her. He realized that the strangling her wasn't going to work so well, so he started to stab her in the abdomen multiple times. So while he was doing this to Catherine, Kevin was able to escape.
You know, it's funny. I don't think I ever recall knowing that he had a victim escape.
Right? He ran a few blocks to his car and drove in search of help. After multiple...
This is the 70s. Can you believe that shit? Fucking, you're bleeding out the head, trying to drive around to find help. You can't find anybody. Then you come across the payphone. Like, fuck, I ain't got a quarter to make a phone call. That's horrible. I shouldn't laugh. I'm sorry. 911 used to be a free phone call. It's a bad joke. I'm sorry.
So he finally found help and everything. So after multiple emergency surgeries and blood transfusions for Catherine, she did not make it. Kevin, on the other hand, was in critical condition, but did survive.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. And then I'm trying to go.
Yeah, I don't think the guy in the short story survived.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
I don't think so.
Sorry to his family.
No, I've met his family. They're not sorry. The guy in the short story. The fictional character.
Okay, so...
Me. I'm saying me. I don't think the family would care if I died.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's putting you on the spot, though.
This is not my confession. It's something you have. All right. Anyways.
Yeah. So Kevin survived, Kathleen did not.
Yes.
Okay.
So far we're up to 5 people. 4 for the family.
Oh, 4 for the Oteros.
Yes.
Otters?
Otters, Oteros, whatever. Sorry.
I wasn't going to correct you on it.
Sorry, Mexican.
What was that?
Love you.
Yeah, I don't say that.
Yeah. Anyways. So, there's 5 total.
5 total so far.
5 total so far.
Are we keeping a tally?
Might as well.
Is that what you want me to do here?
Because I think...
My number with 50 might have not been that far off.
Is this 10?
Is it just 10? I thought he had more.
No, I think it's just 10. So we're up to 5 already. Okay. So now we're going to Cheryl Vivian. I'm so bad with these names.
Shirley Vivian.
Shush.
All right. I don't know. Did you spell it right?
Yeah.
Vian. Yeah. Shirley.
Anyways, in 1977, Raider decided to come out again as the BTK killer after 3 years of silence.
Okay.
Okay. He decided it was time to kill again, but he spotted his soon-to-be victim in a neighborhood that he was trolling through. He was supposed to go after a woman named Shirley, who he met at a bar.
Okay.
You're looking at my notes, I'm being silent, so... likely for her, she wasn't home. He then decided to walk down the street. Walked down the street, and came into contact with a 5-year-old boy named Stephen Redford.
Looks like Redford.
Redford.
I don't know. By what your notes look like, it's Redford.
So this one. Uh-huh. Got it. I don't know. I was having trouble just doing this one. So Rayer pulled out a picture of his wife and son to show Stephen and asked him if he knew where they were. Of course, Steven said no, and he just went home.
Okay.
Why are you looking at me like that?
Well, the way that you had set that up.
It's more of her murder, like how things ended, kind of.
Okay.
Anyways.
Just keep going.
Rayer followed Steven home. He went back later on, knocked on the door, and Stephen answered the door. Raider posed as a detective, which he let him in with no problem.
Hmm.
Including Stephen, there was 3 children in the house.
Okay.
Okay. Raider turned off the TV... and turned down the blinds. Shirley Vian, the mother, came out startled.
Mm-hmm.
At gunpoint, he ordered the children to go into the bathroom and lock themselves in there.
Okay.
He took Shirley to the... he told Shirley that he planned on having his way with her. And somehow he was able to lead her to believe it wasn't rape and calm her down by giving her a glass of water and smoked a cigarette with her.
He told her this, or this is what happened?
This is what happened.
Well, hold on. Well,
he told her that he convinced her this was not going to be rape, even though he was raping her. Or going to rape her.
Okay.
Okay. While the children still screaming in the bathroom, he tied her up and strangled her to death. He strangled her by putting a cord around her neck. He left semen on her panties, which was found by her bed or by her body. In later years, he confessed that the telephone rang. The telephone rang, causing him to leave early, which left the children in the bathroom still screaming for their mother.
Hmm.
And that's where. Yeah.
So that's six.
Yeah. She was murdered on March 17th at the age of 24, leaving behind three kids and her husband, Richard. So, yeah, we're up to six.
Hmm.
So, number seven is Nancy Fox.
Yeah.
Okay. December of 1977, he became obsessed with stalking a 25-year-old Nancy Fox. December 8th, he cut the phone line and broke into her modest duplex from the back door. Luckily for him, she lived alone. He waited for her to get off from her job from the jewelry store. He had no problem surprising her at gunpoint, which was he hid in her kitchen. He told her that he had a sexual issue, and for him to get rid of it, of his issue, he had to tie her up and then rape her. Hmm. Sorry, I was flipping my notes. She was allowed to partially disrobe herself in the bathroom. He then ordered her to the bedroom. He tied her up, then undressed himself. He started to strangle her while... He started to strangle her. He told her who he really is and that he has done this in the past. She was found later with semen on the nightgown that was next to her body. The next day, on his way to work at the ADI.
Alarm company? The ADI alarm company?
I'm not giving my notes, but at the same time, my notes are like not making sense. I did this very late at night. The next day, on his way to work at the ADI alarm company, he called the police and said, you will find a homicide at 843 South Parish. It's Nancy Fox.
See, and said,
That is correct, and left the receiver dangling.
See, that is what fucking kills me about this guy, was after going to school in Butler County, or whatever. Yeah, it was Butler County. After getting his degree and everything like that. The fact that this dude was working for a fucking home safety alarm.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
Yeah. The police rushed over and found Nancy's body. The police tried to replay the recording of his voice many times, but never found a match. In the early 1978, Radio sent a sarcastic poem called Shirley's Locks to the Wichita Eagles newspaper. After the poem, numerous letters from the BTK was again taken responsibility for the past 7 homicides. It was written the same way as the letter in the 1974, and the Factor X letter, which was apparently the reason for him to commit these homicide crime or horrible crimes.
The Factor X letter.
It's the letter that he first.
The one that was left in the book? At the library?
Yeah.
You look really confused.
Again, I did all my notes late at night, and I don't remember half of this.
Okay.
Sheesh. The next found letter was mocking Nancy Fox murder, entitled "Ode to Nancy," which was mimicking the song "Oh Death."
Okay.
I don't know who that was by, but.
Okay. I said it was going to be good. I'm trying really, really hard to be good.
Okay, so we're up to 7. This is going to be number 8.
Okay.
And this one is Marin Hedge. Marin Hedge. M-A-R-I-N-E.
Marion? I don't know.
After 7 years of silence, he got involved in a church and once his son became old enough, he became a Boy Scout leader. And this was in 1985.
I mean, if he never got caught, it's not going to show up on the background check, so...
Yeah, why not? At this time, Rader is in his full... is 40 years old and was planning to kill again. His next victim was a 53-year-old Marion Hedge. She was a widow described as kind and gentle. And Hedge and Rader lived on the same block for over 30 years in Park City.
Fuck you, Marion. You didn't mow your grass last weekend.
Oh, my God. On April 27, 1985, Rader was in the middle of a Boy Scout meeting. He stated that he had a headache and needed to leave to get medicine. He left and walked to his car that was near a bowling alley. He went inside, bought a beer, swished the beer in his mouth, and then spit it out, purposely spilling some on him, giving the onlookers the illusion that he's been drinking. He called a cab, pretending to be drunk, and then told the driver to go to the park city. Once he got to Hedges' home, he saw her car there, so he assumed she was home. He cut the phone line like normal and broke into her home through the back door. It then became apparent that no one was home, so he hid. When she came home, she wasn't alone. He waited in her bedroom.
So she was 53?
Yeah.
She was coming home with somebody? Oh, Marion, look at you.
Yeah, she didn't come home until like 1 o'clock in the morning.
Closing time. You go, lady. You go. I mean, what's about to happen next sucks, but you go.
Oh, my God. The man that she came home with finally left, and then she fell asleep.
Must have not been that good.
Oh, my God. Reddy came out of hiding, turned on the light, and jumped on top of her and choked her to death. Once she died, he threw her body into the trunk of her car.
Of her car?
Of her car.
Don't know, officer. I don't know how she got in there. It's her car.
He went to the church that he went to regularly, and because he was a trusted member, he had keys to the building.
Of course he did. You know, that shit blows my mind. You always got to be careful, because, like, all these serial killers we do, they're always fucking quiet. Oh, you know, we always waved and said hi to the neighbors. It's always a pillar of the community.
It's always the quiet ones. Yeah,
you got
it. It's always the quiet one.
Fucking cops would roll up on me. Hey, you know this guy? Yeah, that motherfucker's suspicious as hell, all
right? Right.
He fucking waves to me every day. He says hi to me every day. I don't know him.
He then proceeded to put black plastic bags over the windows so no one could look inside them.
In the church.
In the church.
He did this shit in the church?
Yeah. He then dragged the body to the basement of the church.
Only good things happen in the basement of a church.
Oh my God. And he wanted a Bible. He took pictures in multiple different poses before putting her body back into the trunk of her car and taking off. He dumped her body in a ditch along the dirt road not far from their home.
Wow. Okay.
So, what, we said this was number 8?
I think that's where we were at, yeah. You had the Oteros, that was 4. Then you turned it on and had little Steven's mom, Kathleen, Megan.
No, Shirley.
Shirley.
Before Shirley, yeah, we had Kathleen, which was 5. Shirley was number 6. Nancy was number 7.
And so, Marie
was number 8. So, number 9 is Vicky Wiggler. Wiggler? W-E-G-E-R.
Wiggler?
Yeah.
Wiggle?
We're just going to call her Vicky.
Yeah, no, I'm good with just calling her Vicky. Okay. Because,
yeah.
Wiggerl.
Yeah.
Wiggerl. Blah, blah.
Vicky.
This is my first language.
Vicky was 28 in 1986, a mother of 2 who caught Raider's eye. So. Oh, here's another one. He would walk by her house and listen to her play the piano. He called this murder the PJ Project.
PJ is in pajamas?
I don't know. He just called it the PJ.
The PJ Project. Okay.
No. September 16th at 10 a.m., he dressed up as a telephone repairman and knocked on her door. She, of course, let him in into the home, thinking that he was going to repair her phone line. He instead cut the line and told her that he was going to tie her up. At gunpoint, he forced her into the bedroom and tried to tie her up, but she gave him a good fight, causing cuts and scratches on him. He got the rope and stopped her fighting and choked her to death. After that, he took pictures of the body in different positions, then left stealing her car. Her husband said that he saw his own car going the opposite direction of the house, but couldn't see the driver.
Hmm.
When he got home, he saw his 2-year-old son by himself in the living room. He searched for his wife and found her on the floor behind the bed in their room. She was rushed to the hospital, but was pronounced dead after a few hours. Rader at this time was getting rid of the evidence, parked the car a few blocks from their home. He then walked back to his house, changed clothes, and got away with another murder.
Hmm.
So, this one made number 9. So, we're at number 10.
I love how you're trying to make it like the top 10 countdown of the BTK.
Sorry. My bad.
Sorry.
Okay, so number 10 comes in. Sorry, I had to do that. Dolores Davis.
Dolores Davis, come on down. You're on The Price Is Not Right. My soul will burn.
You're right. 1991.
91? Hey, weren't you just a spinning image of your daddy's eye? A glistening in your daddy's eye?
Mm.
What month? Oh, you didn't write that down?
I didn't write that one down. A little bit. Or no, sorry. It comes up here. It comes in January.
Oh, January. January 91?
So no, I was not just born yet.
You
wasn't born yet.
You weren't even an image.
Sorry.
Not even a thought.
I was a thought. I was in my mommy's belly.
I was shitting my pants.
You were shitting your pants. Okay, so 1991, 5 years after Vicky's death, Dolores Davis catches Rader's eye.
Does that hurt?
What?
When you catch somebody's eye, does that hurt?
I don't know. You tell me.
Yes. Painfully so. Isn't she lovely?
Oh my god, okay. The 62-year-old lady who lived alone lived only a mile and a half from Rader.
So I'm noticing a pattern here. As he's getting older, he's only going for the older,
people. I think he's thinking more of they're not putting up a...
As much of a fight.
Yeah. And like most of these.
I got my ass kicked and that kid got away. Nah.
Most of these people, older ladies too, are like living by themselves, no family, you know. He had a very well thought out plan for his last victim. He was going on a camping trip with the Boy Scouts over the weekend.
Okay.
So on January 19, 1991.
Okay, first of all, what fucking Boy Scout group goes out camping in the middle of winter?
Educational.
Here's how to not die of hypothermia and cold out in the wild.
And how you start a fire and EM. Okay. Anyways, he came up with an excuse to slip away from one of the scouts' meetings. He drove his car to his parents' house, changed out of his scout's uniform into his hit clothes.
His hit clothes.
He then drove to the Baptist Church in Park City to park his car, and then he walked to Davis's house.
Okay.
Once to her house, he waited outside until he saw that she has fallen asleep.
Okay.
So once she did, he broke the glass with a cement block that he found. She came rushing to see what has happened.
Yeah.
Ryder told her the same line that he's used before, that he was a wanted criminal, needed food, money, and a car, and that he was going... And then he was going to tie her up. He tied her up and strangled her to death. He then took the body outside and put her into the trunk of her car. Again, stole her car again. He drove to a lake near Park City, hid the evidence and the body under some trees. He then drove her car back to the house, wiped the car down for fingerprints, and then left to go back to the church. He went back later where he hid the body with his truck and dumped the body under a bridge in Sedgwick County. He went back some...
Sedgwick County.
He went back somewhere and changed back into his scout's uniform and returned back to the camp. The following evening, he went back to where he left the body and took pictures of it. So, yay. So, that makes 10.
Okay.
So now we're to the point to where we're going to catch him.
We are. We caught him?
Yes, me being in my mom's tummy still and you shitting your pants. We caught him. The authorities.
Looks like we got a mystery to solve, gang.
So, he stayed in hiding from 1991 to 2004. You okay there? So, for 13 years, no one heard from him. On the 30th anniversary of the Arturo...
Otero.
So I was butchering it before and he didn't correct me.
I'm just going off of your spelling. It looks like Otero.
Yeah. After their 30th anniversary of their murder, Wichita Eagle's newspaper ran an article about the crime and the BTK. A book by Robert Beatty?
Yeah.
came out about the nightmare that haunted Wichita, Kansas, aka the BTK. The book and article angered Rader because he thought they were trying to tell his own story.
Oh no.
How dare they?
How dare they?
So March 17th of 2004. Mm-hmm. Rader mailed a letter to the Wichita Eagle from an undercover name, Bill Thomas Kilman.
So original.
And of course the initials.
Yeah. No, we got it.
Okay. The envelope had three photocopy pictures of the ones he took of Vicky and her driver's license, and then signed it with the same signature that has been used in their previous letters. The letter was sent to the FBI, and they did their thing, and the investigation of the BTK started again. So May 5th of 2004, another letter was sent out to the KAKE TV station. This time, it was a word puzzle that contained a deeper meaning with letters and numbers. June 9th of 2004, he left a package taped to a sign in the middle of the city, which had a gruesome description of the Arterio murders and a sketch of a dead body hanging by a rope. He titled the sketch "The Sexual Thrill in My Bill." June 17th of 2004, there was another package labeled BTK that was found at the Wichita Public Library. In the letter, he explained that time was running out for him and he wanted to wait for the right time for his next hit. In October 22nd of 2004, so this makes five letters now.
Okay.
It was found by a UPS driver. A collage of children with binding drawings across their bodies and faces included in an inside an envelope. It also contained an autobiography that listed false details about BTK to throw off the police. So, for example, the year that he was born and the area that he lived in.
Okay.
So he was trying to throw him off. Eight days after he became president of the church council of the church.
The Christ Lutheran Church?
Yeah. There was a special K box with markings of BTK and bomb in the back of a pickup truck.
Okay.
Inside the box was info on his projects that he had watched and stalked along with even more misleading information. In the box, there was a question asking if there was a floppy disk made, if it would be able to trace back to the computer that was used to make it. We're going back to floppy disks.
So it seems like he got pissed about the book, sent in a letter, and then realized he fucked up by sending in the letter and kept trying to throw off the investigation.
He's a narcissist.
That's part of it, yeah.
But yes.
I mean, with all these, the last, what, three letters that he had sent in was all misleading information?
Trying to, yeah.
So.
The police, of course, applied and said that they said no, which was a lie. Because we could always trace that shit. January 25th of 2005. Another cereal box was found after he sent directions to the KAKE TV on where they can find it. Inside the box was a doll with a rope around the neck, simulating the murder of Josephine Arterio. February 3rd of 2005. What?
Nothing.
Sorry about my nose.
No, that's not it.
Okay.
So, February 3rd, 2005.
A postcard was sent to the KAKE station saying that he was going to send a floppy disk. Yeah. 13 days later, the floppy disk was sent to the studio. The police analyzed the floppy disk, which came back to the Christ Lutheran Church under the name Dennis. They looked up the church and found the name of the president, Dennis Rader. They drove past his house in an undercover car and saw a familiar car from the past security camera, the black Jeep Cherokee. Yay. The police asked his daughter, Carrie, for a DNA sample, saying it was for a medical records. Isn't that illegal?
Mm-hmm. Without a warrant.
Yeah.
Anywho.
But really, they were using it to match the semen found in the past criminal scenes left by the BTK. It was a match, and finally, after 30 years, the case was solved. And February 25th of 2005, WPD surrounded his car after he ate lunch at work and then led him to a waiting cop car where he was in handcuffs. So his court case. The same day he was arrested, he was taken to an interrogation room where at first he didn't talk, but soon opened up and gave every little detail possible. He had given a 30-hour confession.
Lord. 1 hour for every year.
Okay, smartass. In his confession, he talked highly about his crimes and was proud of what he had done and highly liked the publicity that he was given. The next day, he took his first mugshot and came to realize that the police was not on his side. Surprise, surprise.
These guys that put handcuffs on me, you know, binding me. Like, I did this to 10 different people. 11, if you remember, Kevin.
Yeah.
I think they're with me. I think they're with me.
Wouldn't you think that?
Oh, yeah, totally. Delusional.
March 1st, the public was able to see a live video of the BTK receiving the charges against him before he was found guilty. After searching his home, the court had a lot of evidence against him. They found...
Yeah, I was going to say, didn't they find all the souvenirs?
They found the mother load. It contained the original BTK letters, the victim's driver's license, photos, cutouts from newspapers, and artwork. They were all found in the cabinet in his home office. His family and friends were devastated when they heard he was the BTK.
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure, and I could be completely fucking wrong, but I'm pretty sure, and it might have been, who was the one that they just caught recently? Wasn't Ramirez. Green River Killer, I think it was. No, the Golden State Killer.
I don't know.
Here recently, I think it was last January, 19, that they had just caught a guy and his kids. Never mind. I'm just going to edit this part out.
Okay. Many said they wouldn't have thought or suspected him. His wife, Paula, did an emergency divorce not long after his arrest. July 27th.
Hold on, wait. So his family and friends were shocked, but immediately after he was arrested,
his wife
divorced him.
Yeah.
I'm so shocked that he killed all those people. Get me half now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess I can understand her, because then, like, the backlash of all of this.
Oh, yeah, no.
Especially to her and her kids, like.
Yeah, but that's the one thing that kills me about the public mindset, is the fact that she had no idea. Her and her kids had no fucking clue.
Yeah, but, I mean, how many people really sit there and think, like.
No, I'm sure once you thought about it, you know, Dad always took off on these times. Remember that camping trip that we did in the dead of winter?
I mean, eventually, like, they could connect the dots, no, but you, the public is not going to sit there and really think, like, oh my God, they really didn't have a clue that he did all this. Like, how can he not notice that he was gone for all these times or he was acting suspicious?
A lot of these times that he did these. Because, again, what was it, like, four of his victims? 4 out of the 10 victims, he was setting up the alarm systems in their houses. That's how he scouted these victims.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you know, he's doing his day job by installing security systems and figuring out who lived alone and who, you know, oh yeah, I'll just find a victim at one point in time or not. But, you know, and then he does it in the dead of night. A common 8-to-5 working man. You know, dead of night.
Well, some of these were in the dead of night. Some of these were, still.
What I'm saying is, dead of night with the family at home.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to assume, hey, Dad was asleep. You know, we were all at home in bed at this time.
Yeah.
So, you know, people aren't going to be as suspicious.
So, July 27th of 2005, court started. For all 10 victims... He confessed with much detail and no remorse and pleading guilty. Family members from each victim were able to speak, letting him know of their hatred for him. After that was said and done, he was able to give a statement. It was a 20 to 30 minute. He was supposed to be apologetic, but mainly talked about himself. Again, comes back to the narcissist.
Most serial killers are.
Yeah. Showing everyone he wasn't truly sorry and he liked the attention he was getting. August 18th of 2005, Judge Waller sentenced Dennis to a life in prison. He wouldn't be able or eligible for parole until 2180.
Well, just 160 years more to go.
He was also not allowed to access any materials that would fulfill his fantasies.
No shoelaces. Can't bind himself with shoelaces.
Well, he couldn't bind himself. He couldn't have any paper or any pens because this drawing.
Oh, yeah.
They weren't even letting them have, like, pictures or anything. So. Well,
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. August 19th of 2005, he was taken.
Mommy, look. They're waking my puppet.
What? Now. Oh, come here.
Be twisted.
You're supposed to be in bed.
There.
Hey, you need to lay down and go to sleep.
August 19th of 2005, he was taken to his new home in El Dorado Correctional Facility. As far as I know, he's still alive, too.
Is he still alive?
Yeah.
Hmm. Is he still at El Dorado?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Hmm.
What?
Maybe we could write him. We start a new little segment up. Not a new show, just a new segment. Stories with a serial killer.
Yeah, fun with that. I'm going to jump or...
It's ridiculous. There's a lot of prisons out there that release addresses and names and everything like that you can pen pal people like that.
I'm fine. I'll pass. I'll do a hard pass.
I can't wait for the documentary about Sam Little to come out. Like, the full-on, after his case is actually... I think his case is done. I don't know. I need to check in on that. Have you heard of Sam Little?
No.
No? Short story... long story short, bad guy. Bad,
okay.
Bad guy. And I think he was arrested sometime early spring last year. And... if I'm not mistaken, they're still doing the court hearings. I could definitely be wrong. But most prolific serial killer in the U.S. history. He claims 150, if not more. Yeah. Oh, trust me. Once I actually find out that the case is closed and he's been sentenced.
I think you and I kind of talked about...
Yeah. But it's cases like this, like the BTK and like the Zodiac and... older cases, you know.
Yeah.
I like doing those because there's not going to be any changes, you know.
Well, I mean, this is already said and done.
Yeah, this is done. There's no way that, like, no new evidence that could release them or anything like that, you know. But with Sam Little, it's like, he literally just got arrested like a year ago. I don't want to sit here and try to do something on him as quickly because I don't want to go back. You know, I don't want to go back and have to rectify anything that we've stated or, you know, done the little bit of research or whatever.
I say maybe he will get parole or something. I say that.
No. If Joe Exotic can't get out of prison because of the COVID-19, I don't think Sam Little did either, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Carol fucking Baskin.
I was just thinking that. Oh my god.
Oh god. That's the end of it.
Yeah.
Alright, cool. So it's your episode. You do the wrap up.
Nah. It's your show.
Just once. I'd love for you to do the wrap up.
I have.
Once. Literally once.
I have.
All right, everybody. You know what this is. As we sit here and try to argue about this yet again.
Until next time.
If you could please go to Facebook, at Squatch Stories and give us a like and a share and a follow. You know, just the usual stuff. If you could, please, please, please go over to anchor.fm. Leave us a beautiful voice message entailing your personal paranormal experiences, your personal true crime experiences. If you're confessing, please don't do that at anchor.fm. Go call 911. Confess there. Okay, don't confess to us because the legality stuff and everything like that. Not, I'm not going to be responsible for somebody getting arrested, okay? Just not. But that being said, please send in your personal stories. That way we can do another personal experience or listener participation episode. We would really love to do another one of those because we kind of had fun doing that. And I've already got a little plot in my head for the next one. We just need the stories. We just need the stories. So guys, send us your emails. Send us your voice messages there at that app. Or, you know, shit, get a hold of us on Facebook. I mean, come on. You can comment on the page. You can send us a message on Facebook. That works too. We'll try to respond as quick as we can. Get in touch with you. And, you know, all that jazz. So, anyways, as always, since we're recording this early with COVID-19 and everything and the states reopening, just remember, be safe. And we love you so much. Like a mother loves her child. We want to take care of you. We want to nurture you.
Really?
But we can't do that if you don't tell us.
Really?
Let's tie it in. Yeah, we love you guys. We appreciate you listening, and that's it. Go to Facebook. Send us emails.
Until next time.
Until next time. Love you. What do you say?
Bye.
Bye.